Yeah, man. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple play Thursday, man. Triple play Thursday. And that's when you request one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Andy got in first. A little Creedence, Green River, so we'll get to hear two more Creedence songs. That's a good thing. All right, how you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Coming up after the 4 o'clock news, we will find out if Esmeralda would buy that with another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? So there you go. All right. Right now, I'm going to be tested by Esmeralda and Dan. Is that right? You guys are going to team up and test me?
That is correct.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay. I don't want to hear any of this.
That's on you, buddy.
We have to save that for Vic for the other segment that we do later this morning. So, Dan, explain what the deal is. People who listen to the show regularly know that I love all forms of comedy.
Right. Yes. And the CNN is currently running a show exploring all aspects of comedy. And So they're doing special things in regards to that. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the 50 most influential people in comedy. Mm-hmm. And then earlier today or Wednesday, they put out this list of 10 questions that are geared to people who love the art.
Okay. And so, by the way, if you're not watching that CNN show, it's great. It was why am I blanking on the word interrupted, but that's not the word I'm looking for. Preempted. It was preempted because of breaking news last week. So it wasn't on, but you have to catch up with it on your on demand. But it's called The History of Comedy, CNN's History of Comedy, and I've watched every episode so far. It's great. Really, they're doing a really, really great job with it. Lots of really great talking heads. It's a terrific show, and I'm really enjoying it. So all right, now how you guys have you guys decided how you're going to do this?
Yes, we're just these are all multiple choice, so I'll just read off the first one, and then Esmeralda will read off the second one,
and so on and so forth, yes. And so on and so forth. All right, so they're all multiple choice.
Yep.
Okay, that makes me feel a little bit better.
There you go.
All right.
Who is considered the first stand-up comedian? Frank Fay, Milton Berle, Will Rogers, or Jack Benny?
I'm going to say Will Rogers.
David listed as Frank Fay.
Frank Fay, okay. What are you going to say?
According to Cliff Nesteroff, author of The Comedians, Frank Fay was an MC who created a revolutionary shift in stand-up during the 1920s when he would serve as host during shows. Instead of talking to another performer on stage, Fay addressed the audience, not introducing performers and entertaining as he did so.
You know, I should have known that. Because not only am I watching the show, and they cover that in the show, I also read that man's book, and we've had him on my show. So I'm already proving to be that I deserve this.
This is like home. This is like a real school test.
Yeah.
I have a red pen also to mark.
Good. Because this is like one of my favorite subjects. This is one of my favorite subjects of all time. So, all right.
Okay.
All right, Esmeralda's going to read the next one. Okay, yes. Let's see what happens.
Saturday Night Live gave us all of these catchphrases except for...
Now, hold on a second. You know I'm not going to miss this one.
I hope not.
If I miss this one, I jump out the window. That's all there is to it. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Bye-bye. It's always something. More cowbell. Can we talk?
Which one is not...
They gave us all of these catchphrases except for
"Can we talk?"
Correct.
Yeah, that's
since its debut in 1975, SNL has been the incubator for pop culture catchphrases like Gilda Radner's Rosanna Dana's "It's Always Something." However, "Can we talk?" isn't from SNL. That was Joan Rivers' infamous line.
Yeah, that's her. Can we talk? That was my Joan Rivers, by the way.
Like pretty good. Back pretty from good. The dead. Huh?
Yeah, it sounded like Joan Rivers was actually in the room. Hey, another little side note very quickly. If you've not, and I can't remember the name, Dan, maybe you can find the name of it online. It's a Joan Rivers documentary from about 7-8 years ago, maybe. And it's great.
a piece of work.
That's it. A piece of work. Joan Rivers. It's a documentary. If you're a fan of Joan Rivers, you really need to see this. And it's great. Really, really great. And, you know, it was insane about what Joan Rivers was so dedicated that she had. Dan, have you seen this movie that we're talking about?
No, I have not.
She has or had a giant, like, Dewey Decimal System card catalog of all her jokes. That she, every single joke that she wrote, she kept in like a file in little, in, you know, on little cards, and kept them like in, under categories of comedy. And it's like she had one room that was just full of drawers of, you know, the little note cards filled like an old school library that you would pull the little note cards out to look up a book. That's what she had. That's what she would file all of her jokes under. That movie's terrific, by the way. So, all right. So I got one right so far.
I think that first one was the toughest. So.
Okay.
All right. Next up, stand-up comedy has roots in which of these scenes? Circus acts, Broadway theater, burlesque shows, or dramatic radio?
That would be burlesque shows.
Correct. In the late 19th and early 20th century, the rise of vaudeville paved the way for comedy to turn into an industry, and the era's burlesque shows in particular opened the door for stand-up routines as we know them today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's you can go back and see some of those routines. You know, and a lot of those routines are still being done today. By the way, I would like to mention doing, you know, I know that, Esmeralda, I know you, and Dan, I know you are too, a big fan of Norm Macdonald.
Yeah, I love Norm.
If you get a chance to go back and look at one of the Comedy Central roasts, and I'm trying to remember who it was, because I want to say it was maybe from 2008.
Mm-hmm.
Norm Macdonald was on the dais, and so the Comedy Central, the people at Comedy Central told him that they wanted him to be extra mean. They gave him notes. They were like, you got to be extra mean, we want you to be dirty, we want you to be very, very... So they gave him notes before he went out. So what he did was, and if you can find footage of this online, I'm sure you can find footage of it online, because it's pretty legendary. It's one of the greatest bits of... one of the greatest sets ever at a roast. And I wish I could remember who they were roasting. I can't remember it, but it was like around, it was 2008. It was a Comedy Central roast. So they have the nerve to tell Norm Macdonald what to do. They want him to, you got to be dirtier, you got to be meaner, blah, blah, blah. So he came out, he went and looked up a roast from 1958. From 1958. And he took jokes, transcribed them from that 1958 roast, and did them word for word. And he would like it would be like, you know, I can't remember whoever was on the dais, but he would say something like, he had note cards in front of him with all these jokes from a 1958 roast written on them. It's just, it was so brilliant. And he'd go, it was something like the jokes from 1958 were like really bad and really corny and not mean and not filthy at all, which is why he did it. He did it, by the way, after this set, he was never asked back to a Comedy Central roast again. Never. Because Norm Macdonald rules. But like one of the jokes, it would be something like, hey, Lisa Lampanelli, I understand that you're a vegetarian, but I still think you're full of baloney. It was that kind of, those were the kind of jokes. It was on that level, and he did 10 minutes of that.
I would expect that from him.
And you know, the audience was like, what the hell is going on? But the comedians on stage, you could see them, they're falling off their chairs laughing because they know exactly what's happening. He didn't go up and set up the bit. He didn't walk up there and go, these are jokes from 1958.
Yeah.
And then he just went up there with a bunch of cards with 1958 era roast jokes on them.
According to Vulture, it was for the Bob Saget roast.
Bob Saget, okay.
And the jokes were from a book called Jokes for Retirement Parties.
From a retirement party. That's what it was. It was a retirement party jokes. Is there footage of that available, I wonder? If we can get audio?
There is. I mean, are we okay to play it?
I would, with this jokes from 1958, I would imagine that it's okay. Well, and by the way, comedy, well, you want to check it out during a break or something?
It
should be okay because, I mean, they're jokes from 1958 retirement parties. Norm Macdonald is a damn genius. He really is. He's like, okay, you want me to be dirty and you want me to be mean? I'm going to do jokes from a 1958 retirement party. That's genius, man. I love Norm Macdonald.
He is the best.
Oh, my God. And, of course, you know, Esmeralda, the infamous, we've played this on the air before, when he was on, Courtney Thorne Smith was being interviewed by Conan.
Yes, yeah,
and
yeah,
she was there to promote the movie with Carrot Top, and he was, like, ripping on Carrot Top the whole time. It was just classic. Classic. So, all right. Well, what the hell's going on now? I got all this. Should we break?
Should we? Yeah.
Let's take a break. We'll take a break. And we'll see if Dan will test it out and see if that's playable. At least some of it is playable. But, I mean, Norm MacDonald telling these jokes is just genius. All right. More comedy quiz coming up. We got to take a break here on WGN. Bring a song and a smile for the friend. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Andy has chosen CCR up around the bend. And we got one more on our Triple Play for that coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Later on, we're going to play another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? And right now, though, I'm being quizzed on my knowledge of comedy, and it's a quiz that's a 10-question quiz that's tied into these to the series of specials that CNN has been running called The History of Comedy, which has just been great if you've not been watching. It's Thursday nights at 9, and then it's available on demand, and I highly, highly recommend it. It is fantastic. So I've got how many questions so far have I answered? 3?
Yes.
And I got one wrong.
Yes.
Okay. And I'm embarrassed about that.
That's okay.
All right.
You have many more chances.
Okay.
Like this one.
Uh-oh.
Which of these films is the highest grossing comedy of all time at the U.S. box office?
Uh-oh.
Tootsie, Ghostbusters, Bridesmaids, The Apartment.
All right. Now, I have a question. I mean, are they adjusting? Is it adjusted? Oh, okay. Then Ghostbusters.
Correct.
Okay.
Admittedly, the answer to this question is tricky and really depends on how you define the genre of movie comedy. Adjusting for inflation, this 1984 action-adventure comedy favorite earned $615.6 million over its 3 releases at the box office, according to BoxOfficeMojo.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's...
You sound very matter of like...
No. Yeah, no, yes. I mean, it's massively huge, that movie. Huge. So now, Dan, were you able to check out the Norm MacDonald?
Yeah, the first minute's good, so we'll go with that. And
okay.
We'll just dump out.
Okay, here we go.
It gets hairy.
I want to start with John Stamos, our esteemed roast master. John, well, John has a reputation for being a bit of a swinger. Did you know instead of an umbilical cord, John was born with a bungee cord? And Cloris Leachman is here. Cloris? Cloris, if people say you're over the hill, don't believe them. Why, you'll never be over the hill, not in the car you drive. Greg Giraldo is here. He has the grace of a swan, the wisdom of an owl, and the eye of an eagle. Ladies and gentlemen, this man is for the birds.
You hear the audience is not laughing at all, but the guys on the comedians on stage are losing it.
Susie Essman, of course, is famous for being a vegetarian. Hey, she may be a vegetarian, but she's still full of baloney in my book. Gilbert Godfrey, one of my best friends. I love Gilbert. When you go to the men's room later, you'll see a sign that says, "Gentlemen, pay no heed, go right in." There's no room that says "scoundrel" on it. But now we come to Bob Saget, and that's why we're all here. Bob? Bob, you have a lot of well-wishers here tonight, and a lot of them would like to throw you down one. A well. They want to murder you in a well.
See, now that's just...
It's a little harsh, but...
That's just genius, man.
They want to murder you in a well. It says here on this card.
So there's that's Norm MacDonald, and you get the another great thing about it is the cuts to the audience, because the audience is like, what's going on? He's just looking around like, what, this is not funny at all. What is he? This is what's going on. And he was never asked back to another Comedy Central roast after that. That's fantastic. Oh man! All right. Where are we at now?
Question number five.
Oh, brother.
In what year did HBO air its first comedy stand-up special?
Oh, no!
1977, 1975, 1986, or 1991?
Oh, man.
1977, 1975, 1986, 1991.
It's either one of the first two. I'm going to say 77.
That is incorrect.
75.
Yes.
Damn, I should have said 75.
Oh, boy.
As 70s comedians like Richard Pryor and George Carlin showed how voracious the American appetite for comedy was, the network then known as Home Box Office decided to air an hour-long stand-up special. It featured Robert Klein and paved the way for the genre.
See, I knew it was Robert Klein. I just didn't know the year. I knew Robert Klein was the first HBO special ever, but I didn't know. I should have said 75. I'm such a moron.
Here, I'll lob you an easy one.
All right.
Which comedian was accused of being a communist and called to testify before the U.S. government? Lucille Ball, Lenny Bruce, Johnny Carson, Jonathan Winters.
Lenny Bruce.
Oh, no.
It's wrong?
No, it's Lucille Ball. Ball was called upon in the early 50s to explain why she'd registered as a communist back in 1936. She testified that her motivation wasn't political, but familial. She did it to please her grandfather.
You know, I should have known that, too, but I got all confused because, like, Lenny Bruce got arrested and taken to court 7 million times. So I just figured, well, he must have been accused of communism as well. But most of his stuff was the reason why he kept getting arrested and thrown in jail was for obscenity. And he kept going to jail and going to court and saying, hey, freedom of speech. And that was his downfall, too, Lenny Bruce. All the times he got arrested and thrown in jail and had to go to court, it got to the point where he became so obsessed with that. And also his downfall was the fact that he did heroin. That might have had a hand in his downfall that he was a heroin addict. But he, you know, the last part of his career, he would go on stage and read transcripts. He would, like, his entire set would be him being angry and angrily reading actual transcripts from his courts, from his court cases. And people would walk out. People would walk out of the clubs. Like, what's going on? Because he was so obsessed with, the fact that he was being arrested and going to court and everything, that obviously his heroin usage, skyrocketed at that point, and his act completely devolved into nothing. You just get up on stage and bitch about the government and the courts, and he would read actual transcripts. Could you imagine paying money to go see one of the greatest comedians of all time, and you go down, you sit down, and all he does is read transcripts from his court case? So, but now I should have known that one too. Man, this is just turning out to be real. I need to hear this.
Keep the fun. I'm Carrie Russell, and I love Nick's radio show.
All right, that cheers me up a little. That makes me feel a little better that Carrie Russell loves my radio show, even though she's never heard it, ever. So, all right. We're going to break here for the news, and we'll come back and jump back in this. So I'm not doing very well here, man.
It's a hard test.
I can't believe I missed three questions, right? I've missed three so far. Am I right? I missed the first question.
Yes.
I missed the Lucille Ball question and that damn 1975. I should have known it was 1975.
You should study more.
Yeah. I knew it was Robert Klein. Does that count?
Sure.
I knew it was Robert Klein. You have to know that.
Half a point extra credit. Like, maybe.
Yeah. Come on, man. I knew it was Robert Klein. Should get something for that. This is not fair, man. You know what? I'm just going to, when we come back, I'm just going to read transcripts from how unfair this is. Oh, man. All right. By the way, you remember Andy Kaufman would sometimes totally screw with his audience. Like one night here in Chicago, and he did this on tour. He also did it in New York when he played Carnegie Hall, if I remember correctly. But he would take out the entire audience. He would do a great set, and he'd take the entire audience out the next night or next door for milk and cookies. So he would take the audience out, and they would go. I think maybe they went on a bus. He put them on a bus. They went to get milk and cookies at a place. They all ate milk and cookies together, and then they drove them back to the auditorium, and then he said goodbye to them. So the second night, all the people who went the first night were like, oh, my God, it was amazing. He was so funny. He was so great, and he took us to get milk and cookies, and he hung out with everybody. It was awesome. The next night he came out, he sat in a chair and read from The Great Gatsby. That was Andy Kaufman. All right, we got to break. News is next. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Triple Play Thursday. Yeah. That's Andy with CCR and Lodi. Triple Play Thursday. Get in there. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Hey, coming up after the 4 o'clock news, we'll play another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? That's where Dan and Vic and I guess, would Esmeralda buy this particular item? She happens to really enjoy purchasing items that are as seen on TV or infomercially. And describe the item, tell you what it's called. And by the way, you can play along at home on our Facebook page. We post pictures, full-color pictures of these items so that you can get a look at them as I describe them. So you got to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. And Dan, we have some visitor or some listener contributions as well.
Yes, first four entries.
First four entries were contributed by our listeners, and we appreciate that. So us three guys try to figure out the mind of Esmeralda Leon.
That's difficult.
All right, now we're in the middle of I'm in the middle of being schooled here on a comedy quiz. How many questions have I had?
Six.
So I've missed half of them. This is embarrassing. I've missed half of these questions, and they're multiple choice. Oh my God! All right. Who's next?
That'll be me.
Okay.
A party record is a benchmark of success for hosting the most parties. A live recording of nightclub's variety acts, a lighthearted collection of songs about celebration, or a recording of racy stand-up performance.
It's D.
That is correct.
And Red Fox was the king of the party record, by the way. Before 20 years before Sanford and Son ever aired, the guy sold the most comedy records, and people would, like, they would play them at parties. They would, like, turn the lights down, and everybody would, like, get drinks, and they would send the kids to bed, and they'd put on Red Fox records.
You should feel very good about yourself, because here is literally what the description says. Red Fox was known as the king of the party records. Albums that he once explained were put on at a party to keep the adult entertainment going. Fox's records were wildly popular by word of mouth before they emerged in the 1950s and weren't easily found in mainstream stores.
Do you know who Red Fox used to hang out with? You guys aware? You guys know who Red Fox, like, was buddies with?
Who's that?
Who also had the nickname Red? Malcolm X.
Oh.
Yeah, they hung out. They would steal stuff. Malcolm X was a criminal before he became an activist. But he used to hang out with Red Fox, and they would wear zoot suits and stuff. And then they would steal things and sleep on rooftops and stuff in Harlem.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, Red Fox has an amazing story. That guy really, I mean, he's not just Fred Sanford. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah. I just, like, wore zoot suits.
Yeah, they did. They wore zoot suits. And, you know, and slightly, you know, when Spike Lee made Malcolm X, which is a great film, the character that Spike Lee plays in the movie is like a combination of two or three characters, one of whom is Red Fox. So they took, like, three real people, kind of combined them into the one character that Spike Lee played. Mm-hmm. And one of the inspirations was indeed Red Fox.
Interesting.
Yeah, Red Fox rules.
Okay.
Yeah!
What was the name of the improv group that led to Chicago's famed Second City? Much Ado About Nothing, The Compass Players, The Good Time Group, The First City.
The Good Time Group. What the hell? It's The Compass Players.
Correct.
Yeah.
Without the original Compass Players, we don't get to Saturday Night Live, Mad TV, or many of your favorite improv and sketch comedy artists. Formed in 1955, Compass didn't last long, but some of its members went on to form what is now a comedy institution in the Second City in 1959.
Two of the members of the Compass Players were the great Mike Nichols and Elaine May. That's how they teamed up. That's how they got together. Yeah, Compass Players turned into Second City. Got to know you. If I didn't know that one, man, I'd have to move to Pittsburgh. I don't know why I chose Pittsburgh.
Is that word? Exile? Comedy exile?
It's comedy exile. Go to Pittsburgh if you don't know. Especially being from Chicago and, you know, having trained at Second City. I can't not know that question.
Is that what's on the Welcome to Pittsburgh sign? You remember, like, when you go into Canada, Welcome to the Home of Saga?
The Home of Saga. And it's all comedy. Exiles. Welcome to Comedy Exile.
Is there a little tick, a ticker there that tells you how
it
many?
It tells you how many
people.
Yeah. That's right. And you go straight to the Pirate Stadium. What is Pirate Stadium called?
Three Rivers.
That's, well, yeah, it makes sense. It's always been called Three Rivers.
It's the only little bit of trivia here. It's the only city where all four of the major sports teams all have the same color scheme. All of them
that's,
are white,
yeah,
black,
and
yellow.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. Wow. Nice piece of trivia there.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Too bad I don't go to cocktail parties anymore. I would have been the knight of the...
Between that and Norm MacDonald's jokes, you would have been the king.
Yeah, she's still full of baloney, I say. They're going to murder you in a well. All right. So where are we at now? What number?
Question number 9.
Oh, boy.
Who is credited as being the first female stand-up comedian? Jean Carroll, Phyllis Diller, Moms Mabley, Judy Garland.
Okay, this is tough. Because it's either Jean Carroll or Moms Mabley. It just depends on the timing. I'm going to say Jean Carroll.
Moms Mabley.
Damn it!
Before Phyllis Diller became an icon in the 50s and before Jean Carroll changed the stand-up game in the 40s, Moms Mabley was making audiences cry with laughter. Yet because the comedy world was highly segregated, white audience didn't get to know the genius of Moms until the 70s, decades after black audience saw her push the boundaries of race and gender in stand-up.
Should have known that one. Man, this is embarrassing.
All right.
You'll get the last
one. Last one.
I'm going to Pittsburgh now.
Pack your bag. Which of these TV comedies had more than 80 million viewers tune in for its final episode? The Cosby Show, Friends, Mad About You, Cheers.
80 million?
Mm-hmm.
Watch the final episode.
Yes.
Give me the choice. I can't
Cosby
believe
it. Show.
How is MASH not the answer?
TV
not a
comedies.
Comedy,
yeah.
MASH is a cat.
I mean, you know. The Cosby Show.
Yeah.
Friends. Mad About You, Cheers.
Okay. It's either Friends or Cheers. I'm going to say Cheers.
Correct.
Okay.
Cheers had at least 80 million viewers watch its series finale on NBC in 1993, the second biggest audience ever for the end of a series behind MASH. When Friends came to its conclusion in 2004, its viewership ranked fourth with 52.5 million people tuning in.
They don't have the numbers for Seinfeld on there? Because the Seinfeld finale was huge.
It's not big enough.
Yeah. I wonder what Seinfeld. I remember we were doing the vinyl shop when the Seinfeld finale aired. And obviously it was a Thursday night because that's when Seinfeld aired. But we vinyl shop ran Thursdays through Saturdays at 8 o'clock. And we were pretty convinced that we were going to have to cancel our performance that night because we'd have like, you know, two people in the house. And one of my proudest moments ever, we sold that damn show out. That show was sold out the night of the Seinfeld finale. I was convinced we were going to sell out. I get to the theater and I look at the books, and we had a 65 seat house. We had 62 on the books. I was like, are you kidding me?
So all Seinfeld haters.
Yeah.
Wikipedia puts it at 76.3 million.
That's haters. Bigger than the other one, than the Friends. They should have mentioned that. Seinfeld, man. Yeah. All right, well, I got half right. That's terrible. All right, listen, I'm going to see if I can get a radio job in Pittsburgh. Because that's where, and what's the name of the Parnimi brothers? What's the name of the sandwich place in Pittsburgh?
Pomeni
brothers.
Oh, I just heard it.
Permerney brothers.
Mr. Martier was talking.
Well, they
about
put
it.
The fries on the place rules.
Pomeni?
By the way, I can't remember. What's
Panini.
It?
Permonti.
Permonti. Ah, that's it. Go. Permonti brothers. That's the first place you go to when you go to Pittsburgh. That's the first place you go to.
Are they crispy fries?
Not really. Mm. They put them the sandwiches are unbelievable at that
right.
place.
But why is this such a thing? Like, and you put the fries on it. Like, yeah.
Well, that's
you
what
can't
they do.
Do that yourself.
That's what they do at Gene and Jude's. They wrap the fries right into the hot dog, so you get the fries all mixed up into the hot dog and the mustard and everything, the toppings from the hot dog mix in with the grease and the salt from the fries. Oh man!
I just pick them off.
Yeah, you can. You can pick them off, but you're still going to have the lovely. The Chicago style dressing that's on the hot dog is on your fries. It's the best, Gene and Jude's, the best. I'm telling you. All right, well, that was embarrassing, everybody. Thank you very much, and I'll see you from Pittsburgh. I'm going to get a Steelers hat. All right. Hey, when we come back, leading up to what Esmeralda buy that. Esmeralda, I have 9 nostalgic facts about Chia Pets.
Oh, wow.
So we'll talk about the Chia Pet, which is a definite as-seen-on-TV item.
Oh, for sure. My dad bought one at a garage sale without the seeds. We never figured out how to get the seeds on there. Like, we didn't know what to put on it.
So it's hereditary?
Totally. No. Yeah.
That's great. All right. Well, anyway, everything you ever wanted to know about Chia Pets, that's coming up. Preceding another battle for supremacy, and would Esmeralda buy that? All right. It's all coming up right here on WGN. 312-981-7200. Ah. Triple Play Thursday, everybody. Yeah, Triple Play Thursday. One song, three songs. 312-981-7200. Mike chose Mos Allison with Your Mind is on Vacation. As mine was during that comedy quiz. Okay. Now I have to become a Pirates fan. All right. Hi, everybody. Nick DiGilio back here. And after the 4 o'clock news, we'll yet again play another edition of Would Esmeralda Buy That? And there are not only pictures involved, but there's video. There's a video involved in one of the items that I just watched. So that'll help us figure it out. And if you want, and again, if you want to play along at home, I'll be describing these as seen on TV-ish items that Esmeralda has a weakness for. And I describe them. You can look at the pictures in full color and video and all that cool stuff. But you got to like us on Facebook to do it. Facebook.com/NickDisha. Now, speaking of seen on TV, I have some facts about the Chia Pet. Now, Dan, did you ever have a Chia Pet?
I personally did not. I think my brother bought one at one time, but yeah. Not me.
I've had a couple over the years. Yeah. Esmeralda, your dad bought one at a garage sale with no seeds.
Right, and we never used it.
Was it just a regular Chia Pet or one of the special Chia Pets?
No, it looked like... Did they all look like lambs?
Yeah, the regular Chia Pet. Yeah, okay. All right.
It sat behind the couch for a very long time.
All right. Let's see. A savvy ad executive took a chance on the Chia Pet. This is our first fact. It's unclear who invented the Chia Pet, but we do know that its massive success can be attributed to a San Francisco ad exec named Joe Padot, whose company also produces the Clapper. Oh, boy. Clap on. Clap off. I like the old woman who's in bed the best. That's no, and that's going to end up Friday morning. Jeez. No, but you know when she goes to sleep,
mm-hmm.
and she claps the lights off, mm-hmm. it looks like she dies.
Oh gosh.
She's got a big smile on her face. She and then boom, she just falls right back onto the pillow.
Maybe she did.
No.
No.
What, like the clapper killed her?
No, like she, you know, it was her time to go, and she was happy with life.
So happy about her clapper.
And body just went, we're done now.
Yeah. According to Smithsonian Magazine, Padot visited an annual houseware show in Chicago. Oh, my God. In 1977, he asked a buyer for a West Coast drugstore chain what his popular items were during the holiday season. He told me that something called the Chia Pet always sells out. So I went over to talk with a man named Walter Houston, who was importing the little figures from Mexico. Houston was losing money on the deal when Padot bought him out. He soon realized the middleman importing the pets from China was taking more than his fair share. The middleman was fired. Padot took over in operations, and an icon was born. So they came from Mexico, and they were discovered in Chicago.
That makes sense. They're like little clay pot-looking
things. Yeah. Here's a shocker. The Chia theme was brainstormed in a bar. Oh, that's shocking. That came from a drinking session. That's really shocking. According to Padot, the now iconic Chia song arose from an alcohol-fueled brainstorming session. I was out drinking one night, and a friend jokingly stuttered Chia. The ad exec said in an American Express open forum interview, I grabbed his arm and said, hey, that's catchy. Let's incorporate it. But others claim that the jingle arose from a much tamer and sober-sounding agency brainstorming meeting. The bar story is better. Stick with that one. The first Chia Pet was actually a Chia human. The first Chia Pet ever sold wasn't actually an animal. It was a human. Chia Guy. A terracotta sculpture of a man's head. It was created in 1977. Looked a little bit like a mix between Homer Simpson and Woody from Toy Story, with sprouts for hair. The product that put Chia Pets on the map, however, was a ram-shaped planter released in 1982. Then later, the company introduced kittens, puppies, frogs, pigs, and other shapes. So the first one was a Chia head, Chia dude. The Chia poll reportedly predicts presidential election outcomes. For the past two presidential elections, Joseph Enterprises has released Chia figurines of the Republican and Democratic nominees and tracked the sales. They claim that their so-called Chia poll has predicted the election's outcome for 2 years running. During the 2016 election, Chia Trump reportedly outsold sales of the Chia Clinton by 77% to 23%. And in 2012, the Chia Obama and Chia Romney were very close to the Electoral College votes. All right. And then finally, the New York Times included a Chia Pet in a time capsule. Chia Pets are such a hallmark of the 20th century American culture that in the late 90s, one was included in a time capsule assembled by the New York Times. In addition to the Chia Pet, the welded, brainless, stainless steel container contains a can of Spam, a box of Sudafed, a gold nose ring, a Beanie Baby, and a condom. What? The capsule is kept at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. It's slated to be open in the year 3000.
They're going to think we're morons.
It's exactly right. It's a condom, a Chia Pet, and a can of Spam? What the hell? All right, we got a break here. We got the news on. We'll wrap up the facts about the Chia Pets, and then we'll find out if Esmeralda would buy that. That's all coming up.
Everybody crying mercy when they don't know the meaning of the word.
All right. Nobody. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich after this show with the opening bell. And at 6 o'clock, it's the great Steve Cochran with your morning drive. Triple play Thursday. Yeah. Mike chose Mos Allison, and that is Everybody Crying Mercy right here on Triple Play Thursday on WGN. Okay. So we're going to play another edition of Wood Esmerald by that in a couple of minutes, but that involves, you know, items that you see on television or that you see in infomercials. And so I'm giving you some facts about the classic as seen on TV item, the Chia Pet. So we'll get back to our facts about the Chia Pets here, and then we'll jump right into Wood Esmerald to buy that. And again, you can play at home. You know, I will describe these items that you see on infomercials or, you know, as seen on TV type items. We describe them. And you guys can play along at home on our Facebook page. You can see the videos and the pictures of all every item so you can play along. And you got to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/NickDShow. And that'll be coming up. Okay. Chia Pets are only marketed during the holiday season. Wow, I didn't know that. Ever wonder why Chia Pet commercials only seem to play on TV right around Christmas? That's because Joseph Enterprises typically only advertises its products during the holiday shopping season so they can market them as a great gift, quote-unquote, for loved ones. In fact, Michael Hirsch, vice president of Joseph Enterprises, told Magazine Advertising Age that in 2008, 90% of Chia Pet sales occurred during that period. Because it's a demonstrable product, its relatively inexpensive price, running them on TV has been our savior every year. We like to say that the Chia Pets have to hibernate for the rest of the year. But plenty of people reportedly buy them. Chia Pets may seem like the relic of a bygone era, but Joseph Enterprises claims that plenty of people still dig the living sculptures. According to the company, they sell more than 500,000 Chia Pet units per year and have done so for the past few decades. Joseph Enterprises is a privately held company, and officials' sales data isn't made public, so there's no way to confirm this for sure. I didn't realize that they were only advertised during the holidays, the Chia Pet. They're sold year-round. Like I can go to Walgreens right now and get a Chia Pet, right? It's just that they don't advertise.
Well, there's no need.
Yeah. But then, you know, so only, you will only hear Chia, like, in December. Here's your second-to-last little fact about Chia Pets. Chia Pets inspire art. A designer, Elizabeth Espinetz, has crafted and wears a leafy Chia Pet-inspired vest. Espinetz made a garment pattern from muslin fabric, laid it on wet foam, planted chia seeds into the fabric, and let them grow. Then she sewed the leafy material into a vest. This garment represents a symbiotic relationship between it and its user. The user needing oxygen in exchange for carbon dioxide for respiration, and the chia needing carbon dioxide in exchange for oxygen for photosynthesis. Espinette explained in a statement. Okay. Chia vest, anyone?
Doesn't look half bad. I'm looking at it now.
Oh, you're looking at the chia vest?
Yeah. I would want one that would grow food on it. Because then you can just sneak and be like, oh, it's in, and then snack on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, here, this is interesting how we're going to segue into the final fact. Chia Pet seeds are edible.
I've noticed they've gone on to the We're Healthy, Eat Us chia seeds.
It says, but you still shouldn't eat them. Chia seeds aren't just for growing, they're also for eating. In recent years, health buffs have anointed the small, crunchy seeds a new superfood as they're packed with omega-3 fatty acids, antioxidants, protein, and fiber. You can purchase foods containing chia seeds in grocery stores or buy them separately at health food stores and cook with them. But if you own an old boxed Chia Pet that's collecting dust, don't be tempted to choke down the prepackaged seeds. They're not thoroughly cleaned. Plus, unlike their store-packaged counterparts, the Food and Drug Administration hasn't okayed them for eating. Like, I'm going to go grab my... Maybe that's what happened to your dad's Chia Pet. The people, person at the garage sale ate them before they...
Oh, they ate them. Okay.
Yeah.
My dad ate them?
No.
I could believe that.
When he purchased it, you know, where are the seeds? Well, we ate them.
That's true.
We ate the damn seeds.
They were ahead of their time.
Yeah, they knew. They knew what they were talking about. All right, everything you ever wanted to know about chia pets. Esmeralda, did you learn anything?
I did.